Hello there.
Hello, sir. So, another recording of the Real NBA. And I just wanted to say before we go into too much detail, if you're typing, please stop.
I was turning the volume. I was trying to find the right volume on my screen.
Well, that went really well. Okay, before I go into it, I got to say those pictures you sent to me of the lady were slamming. I mean, she looks really fun and nice and big smile, and really there's nothing wrong there.
Yep. Well, we don't want to talk about that on the air.
No, we don't. Okay, so this week we're going to do the West Conference, Western NBA. So I'm going to put my 8 picks in, and then my guest Drew will put in his 8 picks as well. Obviously, I'm going to go on record, say my name's Evan. I don't think I've done that in the last two, so this is going better, I think. It helps to be organized. Okay, so the top 8 picks I was going to pick, my number one pick, I think, who will finish
so
first.
So, Evan, just so we're clear, Evan, we're doing the picks for who we think is going to be in the playoff picture when the dust settles, right?
Yeah, like I'm picking my top 8 that I not only think will be there, but the ones I want to be there. So it's kind of like the players and teams I believe in, as opposed to the ones that I think will fizzle out and don't have much substance.
Okay.
So my top pick would be the Phoenix Suns. I'm going to go number 2 with the Jazz because they've been doing good. I'm going to go 3rd pick. I'm going to pick Portland because Damian did really good in the All-Star game. I don't know if you covered that in your podcast. And then I got I got to put in the Lakers and the Clippers. I'll discuss them a little bit, but I mean, I think they've been talked at very extensively.
Sorry, then, you said, just so I'm clear, 1 is the Suns, 2 is the Jazz, 3 is Portland. And then,
yes, then I got the Lakers and the Clippers.
Lakers and Clippers as 4 and 5.
4 and 5. And then I've got the Nuggets in there as 6. I got the Grizzlies in 7. I got the Pelicans at 8. Although when I go over my details, I was going to go over the Mavs and the Spurs a little bit just because there's some interesting points there for me.
Okay. Okay. So I just wrote yours down. You might want to write mine down as well. That could be helpful.
Okay. I will get a pen. Okay, good. Okay.
So number 1, I'm going to go with the Lakers.
Okay.
Number 2, the Clippers.
Yeah.
Number 3, Utah.
Okay.
Number 4, Denver.
Okay, Den, yeah.
Number 5, the Suns.
Okay, so we're just going to continue on where that left off because for some reason there was a glitch. Okay, we're back on. maybe that was a commercial or a planned break. Okay, maybe. Great. So it could have been my chin. I was putting the phone in the wrong place. Okay. So I have number 5 as the Suns.
Yep. And then number 6 is Portland.
Okay.
Number 7 is the Mavs.
Okay.
And number 8 are the Warriors.
Warriors. Okay.
All right, so our lists are very different.
yeah.
If you want to start with why you think the Suns will finish first, you go ahead, and I'll tell you why I think they're going to finish 5th.
Okay, I just really think that obviously Chris Paul will not stop pushing this team. He's one of the main driving forces. But Devin Booker has not only improved every year, but he's really been way better in the clutch than almost any person outside of Kawhi Leonard that I've seen in a long time. DeAndre Ayton has constantly improved, and a lot of the people in the West don't have a center like him who can actually do well, even though I know that the game has changed. He's really been able to impact the game, and his defense and rebounding, as well as all the passes he gets from the point god, Chris Paul, he does really good. So,
okay,
why are they your number 5th?
Well, I mean, I'll just quickly say, I think the Lakers will get AD back and put together quite a run to boost them to first. The Clippers are still working on team chemistry, but I think they'll end up in second. Utah is still really good defensively and good enough offensively to remain in third. So then Denver, I think Denver will start to pick things up. And I just don't think the Suns can compete with those four teams for a top four spot. I think that CP3 is having a great year, and I'm happy for him. And they're keeping him under 32 minutes a game, which is right where you want him to be to prevent injury. So I respect that. And he's having good numbers, 16 points a game, 9 assists a game, 5 rebounds. That's really good for him. And he's also a good leader. But I just don't think Booker has made that that leap to, you know, superstar or even semi-superstar. And I think the rest of their guys are a little young and undeveloped. And so I don't think they're going to be able to continue this going into the second half of the season. So fifth is a good place for them.
Okay. Well, that is agree to disagree. Mm-hmm. Okay. So my second team is the Jazz, which have really been a pleasant surprise this year. Donovan Mitchell has been awesome. His three-point shooting has been an incredible. He said at the end of last season he wanted to work on his three-point shooting, and that's through the roof. He's done really awesome at that. I would definitely like to point out Mike Conley and how important a contribution he has. The one thing I would say, the number two seed finishing fine, but I don't know if they can really win a championship, because Conley to me is more like maybe a 1-2 punch, but definitely like maybe an off-the-bench point guard on a championship team. Like, I really don't see him being the starting point guard. And, like, Marc Gasol is the perfect example. They were pretty similar in skill set. Not skill set, but, like, impact on the court. And Marc and Serge Ibaka were almost interchangeable at the center position. And Marc was never the definitely starting point guard on a championship team. Though he did help as a 1-2 punch become a champion. So, yeah. Who is your number two? I think it was...
So, my number two is the Clippers.
Clips, yeah.
But I will push back a little bit on you with the Utah thing. So
okay.
You got Utah number two, which could happen, you know. But I think they're going to finish number three behind the LA teams. Because although their defense is very good, like, you know, the best, I think it's second best in the league. So although their defense is really good, I actually think Conley can be a starting point guard on a really, really good team, as long as he has somebody like Donovan Mitchell and maybe another really good scorer. But that's the thing. They don't have another really good scorer right now. So you have Donovan Mitchell. You know, he's playing great. Good for him. But Conley, you know, he's a little bit limited offensively. Gobert is definitely limited offensively. And then you got Michael Porter Jr. You have that Australian guy. What's that Australian guy's name? I always forget his name.
I'm going to say, do you mean the new guy on Denver?
No, not the new guy on Denver. The guy
Joe Ingles.
Yeah, so you got Joe Ingles.
He's from New Zealand.
New Zealand, yeah. No, I think it's Australia.
Oh, it might be. Okay.
Yeah. So Joe Ingles, like, he's pretty good as a scorer, but he's not that good. So I just feel like when the Jazz get up against, get up against it, their offense is not good enough to carry them to a second or first seed, I don't think. But we'll see.
Okay.
So the reason I have the Clippers in second is because obviously Leonard's averaging 26 points, 5 assists, 6 rebounds. George is averaging 24 points, 5 assists, 6 rebounds. They are doing everything offensively they need to do. And then defensively, you know, clearly they're phenomenal. And so, you know, they have a couple of good players in Ibaka and Batum and Beverly. And so, but I think with the core of Leonard and George actually putting up those numbers, that's going to get them a second seed by the end of the year.
It's a fair pick. Okay, so I was going to go on to Portland, which was my, I believe, third pick. So Portland, because of Damian Lillard, he's just been so good, you know, stepping over half and draining threes. It's such an interesting show to watch. And then you've got CJ McCollum. I think he's injured. I don't know. If he comes back, maybe they'll I don't know. They could get through the second round. If Dame gets on and does Dame time, maybe they could make it to the Western Conference Finals. But it's a huge if. Who's your third was Utah?
So, yeah.
Oh, you just...
My third.
You could pick, jump to your fourth if you want.
Yeah, my third pick is Utah, which I just explained. So I'll leave that there. Before I talk about Denver as my fourth, I'll push back a little bit on Portland for you. So you think Portland should be the third? I don't think they'll be in the top five. Obviously, that's why I have them at number six. So the reason I have them at six is because Dame is playing out of his mind. Yeah, he's only averaging 30 points, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it is a lot. But he's also averaging 8 assists and 4 rebounds. So he's distributing the ball like really well. And so and he's controlling the pace and the tempo of the games, which is something Dame does really well. And he's just an amazing leader in general. But without his running mate, CJ McCollum, who's out with an injury, CJ was averaging 27 points, 5 assists and 4 rebounds. You really miss those 27 points, considering that Carmelo Anthony can make it up some games, but not most games. And Cantor, he is what he is. And for other players, they're just not good enough to get into the top five with Dame dragging them basically into the sixth spot. So,
yeah, I'd like to say for point before, because Dame does hunt for his own shot for a lot, and being a point guards are supposed to get the other teammates involved. I think that team would be more successful, or Damian Lillard would be more successful, if he had a team where there's an actual point guard that got 10 assists a game, and he still could do what he does, which would be incredible. But there's nobody on the team even averaging 10 assists. So how is everybody involved? How is everybody contributing?
Well, I think with the 8 assists, people are always like 10 assists, because there's two digits. But I really dislike that. Dame is getting 8 assists per game. That's a lot. Like 8 assists is good. Like that's good. And so the fact that he's getting 8 assists a game means that he is getting people involved. He is including people in the offense, because by getting 8 assists a game, that means that 8 times you passed it, people actually scored. There's another 10 times he passes it, and he probably passes it to a good guy in a good position, but they miss. So the fact that he's getting 8 assists a game, he is involving people, and he is unselfish. Like, you know, overall, he's very unselfish. And so I don't think the problem is, you know, they need a point guard. Dame's a fine point guard, and he's an amazing scorer. But I think they need another amazing scorer, which they're missing in CJ. And they're missing CJ's 5 assists a game, which, like I said, 5 times a game he passes the ball to somebody and they score. There's another 7 or 8 times he passes and they miss, right?
Yeah, I'll just say this and then I'll go on to my next one. I feel like with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, they're a good example. They're equally as good. Like, they can both come down and shoot from far, and they can both space the court really well, and that's why they draw everyone out and they kick it, and then everyone has open shots, like a Harrison Barnes and a Kevin Durant. But I mean, if you don't have a player as good as your best player, then it's really hard to be dominant every night. Like Jordan had Pippen. I mean, Dame doesn't – CJ is as close as you can get, but unless you have the guy putting up the same numbers as Dame, it's always going to be a challenge.
Yeah, well,
okay, so I got my
– one thing I'll say before you go on to the Lakers. I totally agree with you. If Dame doesn't have, you know, his Scottie Pippen, you know, his CJ McCollum, then that definitely puts a lot of pressure on him, and that's why it's really hard for them to get above the sixth spot, in my opinion. Okay.
And the last thing I'll say about Portland, because I do have a soft spot for these guys, is I just don't know. Covington and Rodney Hood, they don't seem to be playing as good there as they do on the other in other stops they've had, and maybe it's because they don't get as many touches.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on to four, I have the Lakers, and obviously, there goes without saying, they've made some good additions at the center position. And they have some pretty good depth. They won it last year, so they have another chance this year. Now I want to kind of make this a combination of both. I was going to do the Clippers as well, with Kawhi being one of the most clutch players and George being awesome defensively, a great two-way player. I think they have a chance to beat the Lakers if they come down to between these two in the playoffs. Here's my thing. I think if you had LeBron and Davis versus Kawhi and Paul, I would bet on Kawhi and Paul every time. Like 10 times out of 10, I wouldn't ever bet on the other two. But it's a team game and there is five players on the floor, and I really don't think the Clippers have enough depth. Like the way the Toronto Raptors with Kawhi, they had that depth where it was they could dominate and they could do awesome, and they showed it. They went all the way. But I really don't think you have the players, like down to eight players or more on that team, to really compete with the Lakers. So,
okay. Well, you just talked about the Lakers, so let me go back to my number one spot, the Lakers. Why I have the Lakers in first is because, part of this team is actually tested and true, so to speak. So they have a lot of guys from last year. Of course, LeBron James and Anthony Davis, but also Alex Caruso, Caldwell Pope, Markieff Morris. So these guys, like they know what the system, they know Kyle Kuzma as well. So they know the system, they know what's expected of them, and they've been playing pretty well this year. So I think the Lakers will be in first, but only if AD comes back for like the last 20 games. If AD doesn't come back for the last like 20 games or maybe even 25 games, so that means he has to be back in like the next like 3 or 4 weeks. If he doesn't come back for the last 20 or 25 games, then I don't think the Lakers finish in first, and my whole thing gets like shifted a little bit. But with LeBron's averaging 26, 8-8. Anthony Davis, 22 points, 3 assists, 8 rebounds. Like they're an amazing tandem. And then you throw in the new additions, Schroeder, Wesley Matthews, and that guy that I really like. What's his name? The guy that came from the Clippers.
DeAndre?
No, the guy with guy with the dreadlocks. Oh, Harrell.
Montrezl Harrell.
Yeah. You know, he's a great player as well. And so, yeah, when you have those new additions and you have the holdovers, I think they can finish in first if Anthony Davis comes back.
So to just make this a little bit fun, if I put LeBron and AD, and then I put Kawhi and George on a 2-on-2 game to 12, who wins?
I would say Bron and AD.
How in the world? Kawhi's better at defensive than all three of them. He's got a better, more accurate 3-point shot. Paul George, when he's playing, when he's completely locked in, he's one of the best outside shooters.
Now,
you know, he shoots a great percentage. LeBron never. Okay, LeBron can get to the hole, but I mean Kawhi can guard him. And honestly, he can't shoot threes. That, you know, I mean, we've seen him choke and choke and choke. And by choking, this is a term in our family. It means not being clutch. And especially in a fourth quarter or a game-winning shot like Jordan did a million times over. Well, maybe not a million, but at least a good thousand, if not a couple hundred. AD's outside shooting is somewhat consistent, and he does have defensive prowess. Obviously, he can block the odd shot, but that doesn't matter too much in 2-on-2 if you can just kind of do a quick play and shoot an outside shot.
Well, here's what I'll say in defense of this little NBA Jam conversation is that LeBron James, first of all, is an amazing defender, maybe as good or better than George. Leonard, I wouldn't say Leonard's the best defender out of the four of them, considering that Anthony Davis has been in the defensive player of the year conversation for like 6 years. Last year, I think he finished second, and other years he finished like third, fourth, or fifth. So yes, Leonard is an amazing defender, but Anthony Davis is also an amazing defender. LeBron James and George are really, really, really good defenders, actually. And so all four of them are really good on defense. So AD is probably more versatile on offense, and that's going to play into the 2-on-2. LeBron would play bully ball against Leonard or George, and it wouldn't be easy to play bully ball. But if he has to play bully ball and he's just playing a 2-on-2 game to 11 and he's not worried about 40 minutes of playing, then he could play bully ball and probably bully them enough to win with Anthony Davis being right there, being very versatile offensively.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I mean, if it's NBA Jam, I need a good 3-point shooter. So I'm not sure if I should. Oh, I would take any four of these. Now, what do I got next? I got.
Before you.
You know who
sorry.
I. An NBA if I had NBA Jam and I could take anyone, I'd probably take Trae Young and John Collins, because I'd have the guy down low rebounding, and then I have the three-point shooter. And I don't know why they're thinking of getting rid of John Collins. He's been so accomplished and doing so well.
We can't spend too much time talking about John Collins. Maybe at the end of the pod if we get through our lists here. I have some information about John Collins and some insight there, but let's save it till the end if we can. I know that your number six is the Nuggets, but my number four is the Nuggets, which I didn't get to touch on yet. So I covered the Lakers. I just talked about the Clippers a little bit with Leonard and George just being so good and the supporting cast being good enough to carry them to second. So Denver, the reason I have Denver in fourth is because Murray is actually playing pretty well, even though it doesn't seem like he is. He's averaging 22 yes. points, five assists and four rebounds. Jokic is averaging 27 points, nine assists and 11 rebounds. So they are a powerful twosome. And I think the other players from the bench will come together enough and play defense enough to kind of pick things up in the second half and pass some of these teams like the Trailblazers and the Suns. So that's why I got Denver at fourth. But why do you have them at sixth?
Yeah, I think Denver is, Michael Porter Jr. will get better. I have them a little low. I just think like in the next couple years they'll be much improved.
Okay.
Michael Porter Jr., the Joker as they call him, but he's so awesome in every facet, like rebounding and passing, outside shooting. I would like to see another ball handler on that team. I know Murray's awesome, but I'd like to see even another like top shelf ball handler be able to get into the paint and kick it back, because if Porter Jr. and Jokic are open, it's really hard to beat that team.
Okay.
My next team, I think I had the Grizzlies.
Number seven is the Grizzlies.
Versus Ja Morant is probably my favorite point guard in the league. He's just very dynamic and very fun, and I like how he tries to dunk on everyone, though it doesn't work all the time. If I was a point guard and in the NBA, that's exactly what I would do. I think, and I was able to dunk. I think that's so fun. And I just don't think they can go anywhere in the playoffs. They're going to get bounced just because if they had Jaren Jackson Jr. back and he was at full health, I think they could do really well. Now, do you have a number seven, or I don't think the Grizzlies are in your playoff?
I'm not going to say anything. We got 3 minutes left in the recording here, so I'm not going to say anything about the Grizzlies except for they're too young and they're not ready. Do you want to do
a second one? Because I feel like we're just kind of not maybe saying exactly what we need
might have to do part two, which is fine. Okay, so let me say a little bit more about the Grizzlies then. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I really like the Grizzlies. I love Ja Morant. He's my second favorite person to have the name Ja. My first is obviously Ja Rule. I do love Ja Morant. I love his confidence. I love the way that he tries to get teammates involved. He's very young, but he is unselfish. I've watched quite a few games. And they got that big guy. What's that big guy's name that they got from Toronto?
Valanciunas.
He's a good big man. I like Valanciunas. I always have. They got Valanciunas. They're going to get Jaren Jackson Jr. back, and we'll see how that goes. I don't dislike the Grizzlies, but I just don't think they're ready to make some waves and get into the playoffs this year.
Can you do me a favor, Drew? Can you watch highlights of the Grizzlies and watch Valanciunas when the ball gets swung and he has to play defense? He shuffles his feet. He looks like a deer caught in the headlights. I just want to put that out there. Okay. My number eight pick was the Pelicans. Zion Williamson is one of the most exciting things that's happened to basketball in, I would say, over a decade. My thing is... The question mark and the thing is LaMelo Ball. I mean, I could talk about Zion for a while. Just he's really got
you
field
mean
goal
Lonzo.
Percentage.
You mean
he's really
Lonzo.
Good inside the paint. I do mean Lonzo.
You said
what
LaMelo.
The heck did I say? Shoot. Well, I think LaMelo should get a little more airtime. But anyway,
but
we'll
before,
focus on Lonzo right now.
I'd like you to talk more about the Pelicans, but it's less than a minute now, so I think maybe stop this recording and start part two.
Okay, let's start part two then. Okay, stopping.
Hello there.
Hello. So part two, just because the West Coast has so many awesome teams and players. Now, normally, I would say the top eight go into the playoffs, but it's really hard not to talk about at least 10 or 11 teams in the West because a very few games separate them. And it's important to kind of, you know, highlight a lot of people. And I think in 2 or 3 years, the playoff picture is going to change dramatically. Like, there's going to be 2 or 3 new teams in the playoffs and everything. Anyway, we were talking a little bit about Zion Williamson and Zion Williamson and Lonzo Ball. I don't know who said LaMelo. I mean, I don't know who brought that up, but yeah. So Lonzo Ball, yeah, you know, his 3-point shot has gotten a lot more confident. I think he'll continue. He's at 40% shooting the 3-ball. I think his confidence is gonna be fine, and I think he will continue to shoot well. I mean, if he's like that, get him the ball a little more. And I think he could average 20 points, 10 assists. It doesn't seem out of the, you know, the impossible. He can get more than 5 rebounds. So he seems like he could be one of the top point guards in the league. He's very calm, keeps his team even keel, passes the ball, gets everyone involved. He seems awesome playing with Zion. So I don't know. Maybe they'll trade him. But if they don't, I think he's a great running mate for him. And obviously, I got to bring up Brandon Ingram. I feel like it's a given he's an all-star. He's awesome in the clutch. When I see him, whenever he has a real shot to make, he does make it. He seems like a little leader, and he seems good on this team.
So what I'll say about the Pelicans before I give you my 7 and 8 spot, which are different from yours. I will say that I do like Zion. Obviously, he's going to be amazing if he stays healthy, if he kind of can take off a little bit of weight. Because I do worry about his knees and other things in his body. If he keeps that kind of weight on that frame, I'm worried about that, but we'll see what happens. I really like Lonzo Ball. And from what I've heard on podcasts and read myself, Lonzo and Zion actually are, you know, they're really good together on the court. And I have seen it, actually. But I do think that Lonzo is a good player. I think he plays well with Lonzo, or he plays well with Zion. Lonzo is unselfish. I think he plays basketball the right way, in my opinion. That means involving as many people as you can, because that's what a good teammate does. And I think Brandon Ingram is good, but I will agree with the great Bill Simmons, who has an awesome podcast. He said that he's not sure if Ingram and Zion are going to be a good fit moving forward. And I agree with that. They might be a good fit. I'm not sure. But I just don't know if they will be a good fit together. So maybe Brandon Ingram is awesome, and that'd be a good trading piece if they wanted to trade him. He's a great player, and he's been playing really well. But I just don't know if Zion and him can exist together. But, you know, I could be wrong, and maybe they'll figure it out.
I think Zion and Brandon Ingram can play together. I don't think anything is their issue. I think, so you're playing, you've got Adams at the center position, Zion, and then Brandon Ingram. Now, in the middle of the game, you want Zion at center, you want Brandon Ingram at the four. He seems like a 3 or 4. He seems no problem switching between those two positions. But who do you put at the three? And who do the Pelicans have? In my mind, almost no one to put at the three that's anywhere comparable to Brandon Ingram. If you put a wing that's able to play maybe the two and then slide him to the three, you might have a good recipe there, because you need not only somebody to help defend, but help do be almost as good as Brandon Ingram at the three. I mean, you want somebody as good as him, but good luck finding that. Because their guard position seems locked up for me. You've got Josh Hart, which is decent. What's his name? Bledsoe was always good way back when he played for Kentucky, and then now he's been in the league forever with the Clippers, and he did so good in Milwaukee. So he's solid. So you just need I would say just another good wing. So
I got my 7 and 8 spots, but before we go to that, I just want to say that Bledsoe, he's a liability, and he showed that in Milwaukee. I feel bad for Bledsoe because, similar to DeRozan and Kevin Love, I feel like, well, DeRozan and Kevin Love actually came forward and said that, you know, psychologically, they do get stressed out. They do get a little bit anxious. And that's something that Paul George talked about when he was in the bubble. And so, you know, I do feel for them. Because when it comes down to it, and the pressure is really, it's really high pressure. People like Kevin Love or DeRozan or Paul George, they've admitted that those are really that's really hard for them. And so in the same way, I think that Bledsoe deals with that. I don't know if he's come out openly and said that, but I think it's pretty clear that psychologically, he does get anxious. He does get nervous. And so when he was in Milwaukee, he really didn't show up for Milwaukee in the playoffs. He did in the regular season, but he didn't in the playoffs. Could it be a psychological issue? I don't know. But that actually makes him a liability, which I feel it might be a little bit mean to say, but it's kind of the truth. And he showed that in the playoffs for Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go too much on Bledsoe, but definitely shooting about 30-35% during the season and then 25% in the playoffs ain't gonna get you there. But I mean, for me, it's dealing with anxiety is obviously breath control, like being able to meditate. And Phil Jackson was the best at that. He taught the whole team of the Chicago Bulls the whole time that he was there how to meditate, how to calm down, how to stay, how to use your awareness in a game. And kept them calm all year. So by the time the playoffs come, they were just naturally excited to just go do their best. And that went from players 1 down to 12 or, you know, 13, 14, 15, depending on how many people you had. And Bledsoe, I don't know if Bledsoe's had that or if he's even looked into it, but that would be that'd be what I would look into.
Yeah.
Okay, so number 7, you have the Mavs?
I have the Mavs in number 7
okay.
Because Doncic is averaging 29 points, 9 assists, and 8 rebounds this year. So not only is he an MVP candidate, if the Mavs can get higher in the standings, which I don't think they will, so he will be like an afterthought for MVP, but he is playing incredible this year. I think that Doncic will continue to play incredible, and other people on the team, now that COVID has kind of like gotten past the Mavs, they had a little problem there with COVID and stuff. So I think that when all the players come back, Hardaway Jr., Brunson, Powell, if everybody's like there, I think they can compete and get into the playoff hunt. Porzingis is averaging 20 points and 9 rebounds a game. The other night he had 28 and 14. And so if Porzingis can keep getting like pretty much 20 and 10 almost, I think that looks good too. And so I got them in the 7th spot because I just think they're better than the Spurs, the Grizzlies, the Pelicans, the Thunder, et cetera, et cetera. I also think they're better than the Warriors. So did you want to push back on the Mavs before I talk about the Warriors in the A spot?
I'm really big on the Mavs. I think I have them out of my playoff picture, but I really think they could be high up in the bracket. I just think, like, do you think Josh Richardson is the answer? Because I'm looking at this roster going, okay, Finney Smith is awesome. Even Powell can hold it down. Porzingis and then Doncic. I mean, Doncic could get MVP this year. I could give it to LeBron. And mostly because LeBron is doing it at an age that you don't know if he'll be able to do it the next couple of years. So I maybe throw the MVP, because Doncic could get MVP the next maybe 10 years if he keeps playing like this. He'll have plenty of opportunities to get it. But they need Seth Curry was their best option for somebody to play with Doncic, where he could be wide open and knock down threes. I don't know if they need someone on the wing or somebody like that, like a really dead eye shooter. It just seems like Josh Richardson isn't that. I don't know. I think he could be that. He seemed like that in the preseason, and then the regular season, he's never really seemed to fit in with what they're trying to do. I don't know if they just needed to sit there and shoot threes, or if he can drive and kick a little. I don't know.
Yeah, like, it doesn't seem like. I don't know this for sure, so it's something I would have to read more about. But they pretty much traded Josh Richardson for Seth Curry, right? Philadelphia. So
Philly, yeah.
I think they went with Josh Richardson over Seth Curry because they wanted more defense. The reason Philadelphia would take on Seth Curry is because they weren't so much worried about his defense. They wanted his shooting. They feel they have enough defense, which is probably true. Yeah.
Yep, definitely.
But I don't think Josh Richardson is actually a good fit in Dallas. I don't think he's been playing well. I don't think he's a good fit, and I would be surprised if he's there next year, because I just don't think it's working out. But we'll see. But I don't think it's working out, and I think that Hardaway and Finney Smith are definitely better for the system than Richardson is. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just throw this out there because I watch both teams. I think Miami has 3 or 4 good shooters, and when Butler was still on Philly, Richardson played really good with him. So maybe they could do a trade there. I don't know. Mm. But so who's the last? You got the Spurs in there?
Number eight is the Warriors.
Oh, the Warriors. Yeah. Oh,
so
okay.
I think
all
Warriors
right.
The Warriors will get in because.
Oh, is Klay Thompson coming back?
No, he's not coming back, and that's okay.
Well, then they're not coming back to the end.
So Curry, I think, is going to carry this team into the playoffs, similar to the way Dame Lillard is. Curry's averaging 30 points, 6 assists, and 5 rebounds. He's having a great year. Oubre is doing enough. Wiggins is doing enough. When Draymond Green is in the games, when he's not injured, he's obviously an incredible playmaker. He gets enough rebounds to keep you happy. And also on the defensive end, he is the anchor for the defense. So Draymond Green does not score. Let's get that out there. He has not scored very well the last couple of years, but he's still the defensive anchor. He's still incredibly intelligent on the offensive end, and he makes that ball move. He gets a lot of hockey assists, like we say. He gets that assist before the assist. I think the Warriors will kind of sneak into the ace spot because of Curry carrying, other players doing enough, and yeah.
Okay, well, I'd like to definitely speak about the Warriors. Before I go into my one or two last picks here, I wanted to talk about the Warriors. I mean, I find they're a mess, and here's why. Okay, they're trying to make Wiggins into the defensive player of the year, and that is the best goal ever. Okay, first I'd like to talk about Draymond. I mean, he's great. I mean, everything he's saying online is spot on. His defense, bringing the team together, he's a real leader in that. He's great at bringing the team together. It's one of his natural talents, so or skill, I guess, so keep doing that. But I mean, making Wiggins into a defensive player seems to be a little bit not what he was meant to do. He just seemed like he was always meant to be a scorer. He's still scoring at a high clip, but it's just not, I don't know. He should add the defensive aspect to his game. I guess he always should have had that, but it seems to have been slowing. It slows his offensive down. Now, I'd really like to talk about Kelly Oubre Jr.
Oubre.
Because he, okay, you say it the southern way, I say it the northern way. So he, did you know that he went 0 for 27 in his first three-point shots that he took on this team?
Yes.
And then he finally hit one. Now, why is it so difficult to hit, to shoot that way on this team? And the Suns, he shot awesome. On the other team he was on, I believe Washington, he shot awesome. Where, like, why? And then, okay, so if he can shoot well and keep attacking the rim, I mean, they're definitely a formidable team. Steph's always awesome. I don't think Wiseman will be a factor. But Steph, I just always think of Toronto when Van Fleet guarded him one-on-one and Toronto beat them. So to me, the Warriors can't make it to the end, but sure. I mean, yeah, they might make it in the playoffs and they might be a little bit competitive.
So before you talk about your teams there, and then I'm going to talk about the teams that I left off the list. I already talked about the Grizzlies and the Pels. I will talk about the Spurs after you talk about the Mavs and Spurs. But one thing I'll say about Oubre is that he could have been nervous in the beginning of the year, and he's been playing much better since then. And what I will say about Wiggins, I find it strange how you say, like, you know, making him a defensive player. Everybody has to play defense. So, you know, if you're saying like they're trying to turn him into Klay Thompson, well, that's impossible. You know what I mean? Like, Klay Thompson is amazing when it comes to defense. Wiggins will never be Klay Thompson, but does he need to put effort in and do his best on defense? Yes. Do majority of players in the NBA not do that? Yes. It's very frustrating when you watch these guys and they're not even trying on defense. It's like, really? Like, it's a two-way game, and if you don't realize that, like, you know, you're not going to be a winning team.
Oh, for sure. It's very hard to win. There's two parts in defense. One is positioning, and one is defensive rebounding. Okay, now Wiggins didn't really take part in the defensive rebounding, and what I mean, and I'm not trying to pick on him, he's from Canada, so I'm going to have his back. When people would shoot, he would leak out and try and run down the court. We call it cherry picking. He just leaks out and you throw it up the court and you'd get a free layup. But that is the opposite when you want to defensive rebound. You need to be there to help. Positioning is the other part. That goes for the whole defensive possession, where you need to be in your spot, which is usually man-on-man. But if you're in a zone, you have to be in that spot guarding two or three people at once and be ready to pivot and guard everyone. Because if you're not, two or three people might get an open shot, and you look like you're the guilty one. So anyway, moving on to the Spurs. Here's my thing about the Spurs, and I really wanted to mention this. The exciting thing for me would be Murray, Walker, maybe off the bench, White. You got that new young guy from the draft, Evan Vassell, and Poitel, the tall guy from Patel. She will say Patel. Patel sounds better. We got from Toronto. So you've got five really awesome young guys. Those are so exciting for me. Oh, and there's another guy too, a really good dunker. Anyway, I'll have to look it up later, but he's awesome. And he's like a young Vince Carter. I think his name's Johnson.
Keldon. Anyway, Keldon Johnson.
Keldon. Yeah, he's really hype. I mean, he can jump really high, and man, he's really fun to watch. Okay, so but on the other flip side, they've got like DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge, who are great. I won't take anything away from them, especially DeRozan, who's on Toronto, one of my favorite players of all time. But yeah, I mean, they're kind of on the other side of their career, and they could be on a championship team and really help a team get over the hump. Mm. And obviously, what's his name? Patty Mills, another awesome guy. He's great, but again, he's like a veteran, and he could be used on a championship team as somebody come off the bench. I mean, he's fine. You know, I mean, with Murray, if Murray's healthy and doing amazing, I would never put. I would always keep him on the floor. I mean, he gets steals, blocks, everything from a point guard. You know, he gets right to the rim. He's really exciting to watch.
Yeah, what I would say about the Spurs is I agree with almost everything you're saying. I like the team. They're a good team. I really like DeJounte Murray. I really like him a lot. DeMar DeRozan as their quote-unquote best player. He's not going to carry this team into the playoffs, in my opinion, especially since the news just came out yesterday or 2 days ago that LaMarcus Aldridge will be moved. So LaMarcus Aldridge, like, he's not having like an incredible year. He's averaging 14 points and 5 rebounds a game. And so he's not having an incredible year, but I mean, he was a presence. And so when they lose Aldridge, like, you know, that'll sting a little bit depending on what they get back. But I just think, like, you know, guys like Lonnie Walker, who's really good, and Keldon Johnson, who's really good, and Patty Mills, like, he's an amazing shooter. I just don't think they have enough to get into the playoffs. I think they're going to get squeezed out. You know, they could surprise us because Popovich is a freaking wizard. He's basically Gandalf. But I don't know if he can. I don't know if he can squeeze this team into the playoffs this year.
I got to say, my favorite thing about Greg Popovich is that he has a motorhome, which is exactly like my life here. But yeah, no, he's a great coach. I just think if they use the five or six young players they have right now and build underneath, but with through the draft and maybe a couple trades, they could really have like a dominant team in the next 2 or 3 years. But that's just the way I look at it. My last team would be the Kings. If we have time to discuss it, I mean, I like De'Aaron Fox. I see a lot of myself in him. He always wants to win. He'll do anything. He's improved his 3-point shot. He's so fast with the ball. I don't think I've seen many people except John Wall is fast with the ball. Marvin Bagley has been really good, but he has a lot of room for improvement. At 6'11", he's got to be down low. It's like the Embiid. He's got to be down low banging. He's got to take it down low and really do and really dominate. And I would say 20-10 guy easily. And I think the Kings might have a chance to squeak in, but right now they're just I think they're a player or two away from really being relevant.
Yeah, when it comes to I already talked about the Spurs, the Grizzlies, the Pelicans. So with the OKC Thunder, I love SGA. He's awesome. But the Thunder with him and Al Horford, they're just not enough to really do anything. So, you know, they are what they are, but SGA is developing and I'm really proud of him. He's awesome. Sacramento, I like Sacramento. They're really fun to watch, actually. But yeah, they're definitely a couple players and maybe a couple years away from being relevant. they're not going to make much noise this year. That seems evident already. But I do love De'Aaron Fox. I really like Holmes. I like Buddy Hield. I always have. But I just they didn't really make any moves last year or the year before, I don't think. And so they're kind of going with what they got, and they're seeing if they can develop it. But I just don't think it's developing very quickly. They could make some noise in a couple of years if these young guys get better and develop better as a team, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, for me, there's been a lot of people don't seem to be able to place Buddy Hield. They say, oh, he's so good and he's a good 3-point shooter. They don't seem to understand what he is, but I see it perfectly. I mean, he's an awesome shooter. He is one of the best. We'll say 23, 24 a game, almost no rebounds, almost no assists. What that is to me, that's a Craig Hodges or a Herb Williams on the Chicago Bulls when Jordan was there. So he would be like one of the best off the bench scorers that the league has ever seen. Probably one of the most accurate. You could even have a player not as dominant as Jordan and have him in there and take turns going in and out, and they'd do really well. Now, who do you think the OKC Thunder would need to really kind of start going in the right direction? I mean, they're did you know Darius Bazley was with Rich Paul's as an agent, and Rich Paul has like Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and select few others?
No, I didn't know that, but I do like the Thunder, but I will remind you, we got about 40 seconds left here. It's just always good. It's always good to end the podcast in a good way instead of being cut off, of course. But yeah, so I will say that OKC need a lot, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe one or two veterans, but a lot of draft picks. Yeah. Okay, man. Well, it was good talking to you, and I'll have to talk to you next time. And
all right. Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
Take care. Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, sir.
How are you doing today? Okay.
Good. How are you?
Good. So, in this week's podcast, me and are going to look in the top five backcourts in the NBA. I'm going to have my list, and then Drew will have his list, which might be not as good. Okay, so now we looking up the backcourt. Actually, I somehow looked up some history about all the top assist getters in the NBA, and I had no idea Paul was in the top five. Chris Paul for the Phoenix Suns. He's got 10,000 assists career. Some other people who are still active who have these numbers are James Harden. He's got 10,000. LeBron James has got 10,000. Russell Westbrook's got 8,000. Even Rondo's got 7,000. It really shows the strength of point guards in the league, that when people actually play point guard and pass the ball, how high the numbers can get. I saw as well Stockton's at the top with 15,000. Obviously he's one of the best playmakers, gets everybody on the team involved and makes them all better, which makes him an extremely perfect example of a professional. And then you've got Jason Kidd with 12,000. Jason Kidd had a lot of assists. I got to mention his turnovers though. He had a lot of them, but again, he was a great leader and I think he won one title. So that's worth mentioning. Now the other thing, when it comes to a backcourt is shooting guards. I've got a list of some field goal percentage I looked up for them. So starting off with Beal, Bradley Beal of the Washington Wizards, he's got 49%. Lillard's got 45%. LaVine is 53%. So it really, certain people are looking great, like LaVine. Kyrie Irving's actually at 52%. They'd be really ready for the playoffs to do well. And then you've got Trae Young for the Atlanta Hawks. He's only at 43%, so that's not very good. That doesn't really bode well for the playoffs. Harden is 47%, which again is not looking good for the playoffs. Booker is not bad at 50%, but again, I don't know. The final one I got here is Donovan Mitchell of the Utah Jazz. He's got 42%. That's so low. I was explaining to Drew earlier about how Michael Jordan used to say that the percentage points would go down from the regular season to the playoffs. And if you look in history, it's always true. So unless you have a high percentage in the regular season, you're not going to shoot a very high one in the playoffs because the tension's a lot higher and there's a lot more riding on it. So you see, like Mitchell might have a little bit of trouble in the playoffs unless his field goal percentage picks way up and he does really well like he did last year in the bubble. Now we can go into – oh, one more thing. I looked up just before we do our top five. I looked up the top assists per game for guards this year. The top one is Harden at 11 assists a game. Westbrook's at 10. Trae Young's at 9. Luka, Paul, and Jokic. Even Jokic's not a guard, but he's on there as a center. He's got 9. It just shows how much the NBA's changed. I mean, you do have centers. You have more forwards and big men really getting a lot of assists and getting their teammates involved, which is good. So unless Drew has any comments on any of that.
Do you think I have some comments?
I think you might have some interjections.
I probably have some comments. First of all, one thing I love about some commentators for the NBA and podcasters is when they get the names right. So I think we should try to get the names right. So when Jokic, we say Jokic. He's actually from Serbia, and many countries, including Serbia, when you see that IC at the end, it's kind of like an itch. Jokic.
Huh.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
No problem. I mean, Djokovic is one of my favorite, is my favorite tennis player, right? So he's from Serbia. So from tennis and basketball, I've learned a lot about name pronunciation. So it's Doncic as well, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm still learning how to spell them, let alone say them.
Okay, not a problem. So that's just the first thing. Let's try to get those names right and show respect to the players from overseas. And you mentioned Trae Young in the playoffs. Well, they might not make the playoffs, so he won't have to worry about his percentage dropping off in the playoffs because he might not be there. But one problem with Trae, he chucks up a lot of shots early in the shot clock because he has an opening. The problem is those shots are 26 to 28 feet away from the basket. And, you know, those are three-pointers, but they count for your field goal percentage. And so, you know, 43%, it's not great, but he needs to learn to, you know, maybe not chuck up so many of those shots because, A, it's early in the shot clock, and, B, he's not making a lot of them anyway, so let's stop that. Mitchell, 42%. Yeah, Mitchell takes a lot of Kobe-style ill-advised shots because he's still young. Unfortunately, Kobe was still taking those when he was older. But Mitchell takes a lot of ill-advised shots, so that's something that hopefully he'll get better at. And when he stops taking and forcing shots, hopefully his percentage will get better because the shots are of a higher percentage and he'll make them.
I always forget about how he's young, and because when you see them in playing on, you know, in a game, they look like full grown men and they just look like they really handle themselves really well. But you're right, though. Like anybody, no matter what age, could always have room for improvement.
Oh, yeah. There's a development curve, of course. And I think that it's important to realize that. I don't like when people come down too hard on rookies or second year or third year players. I feel like we need to give them a bit of a window there where they can develop and progress instead of coming down on them too hard too early. I don't like that. As for the playoffs, you're saying, you know, players' percentages go down. And yeah, I could totally see that happening. And because teams' defense gets a little bit tighter, the players themselves get a little bit tighter. But there's another factor. And the factor is that in a long series, teams get used to a player. And so they make adjustments after game one, after game two, after game four. And so you play somebody in a 6 or 7 game series. By the time you get to that 6 or 7 game, everybody knows what everybody else is doing. So it becomes even more difficult to score, right?
Yeah, you're right. Especially if they have predictive plays.
Yeah. If you're a person who watches tape, and a lot of the guys do, not a lot. I mean, there's a number there. I don't know what it is. But like, you know, for teams and guys who watch a lot of tape and are really serious about the defense and the scheming, then yeah, those long series, you're going to really have a hard time as the series goes on because, you know, they start to predict things you're going to do, and that just makes it more difficult, of course.
Yeah. You know, the best thing, and I know I talk about them a lot, but the Chicago Bulls, I mean, the way that they did meditation, in their practices, and they really, that was almost like, a culture that it did was a lot of meditation that helped them stay calm through a lot of those playoff series. And a lot, when it got to a game 7 and the stress was the highest, they were just calm as anything, like calm as a serene pool, because they had the breathing and they, and they focused on it, and they didn't get too excited about big moments, and then but they were able to really execute in those moments as well.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I meditate myself, so I can totally see how it would help them for sure. It's helped me over the years. So, do you want to give your top five?
Your top five, or
you can start with your top five backcourts for this current year.
Okay, let's see if I can. Okay.
Hello.
Okay. Hello.
That was the fastest interlude in history. Okay, yes. So we were going to go right into our top five backcourts in the NBA for the 2021 season. I guess I'll just jump right into mine. I've got my top five here, unless mm-hmm. you wanted to say your top five first.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, so here I got my top five here. I got Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal. They're two of the most dynamic, exciting backcourt in the league for the Washington Wizards. I really want to see them make the playoffs. The young players seem really hyped and excited to do well. My number two is Harden and Kyrie, basically unstoppable. I've seen Harden do good in the West, but let's see if he can get out of the East. We got number three. I got Chris Paul and Booker. Both really good at what they do. And then we got number four. I've got Tyler Hero and Robinson in the Miami backcourt. I think they're the two best guards back there. I really think they could put a point guard with those two and let them be on the wing to really maximize their efficiency. But I guess that's a podcast for another day. Now, number five, I have Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. Definitely a good chance to go deep into the playoffs. And I got a number six, and I don't know if I should really go into it. I would like to mention Victor Oladipo, depending on the trade deadline where he ends up. It could be very exciting.
Mm-hmm. So Victor Oladipo and John Wall?
Yeah, I mean, John Wall is coming back from an injury, but his three-point shot has really improved. And he's looking pretty sharp on the court. Unfortunately, Houston aren't getting very many wins, but since he's come back, he's looked good.
I just want to point out something very funny about your sixth pick, because in a couple of weeks, or sorry, in a week, the deadline is March 25th. In a week, yeah. Victor Oladipo could be on another team. And and the other thing is that as of right now, Wall is going back into knee surgery. So
what? Yeah. Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Well, that's not encouraging news. But okay. Well, hopefully him and his family. I wish them all well. So.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll give my five, and then you can explain and defend your five. So my five are actually pretty similar to yours. I got number one, Harden and Irving.
Okay.
Number two, Lillard and McCollum.
Okay.
Number three, Westbrook and Beal.
Okay.
Number four, Lowry and Van Vliet. And number five, Paul and Booker.
Okay.
So why don't
I really want to hear any explanation of how you can put Kyle, even though I am a huge Raptors booster, I mean, How can you put Van Vliet and Kyle on a top five list?
Okay, so why don't you start with your number one and defend it, and then I'll tell you why I have your number one at my number three and see how we agree or disagree there.
Okay, so Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal. So Russell Westbrook, well, obviously he has 8,000 assists for his history for being a point guard. He gets everybody better, makes his whole team better. I don't think he gets even remotely nearly enough credit for that. People constantly go on about his non-shooting ability and is unable to make game-winning shots. But for me, if you're making your whole teammates better, then all your teammates should be good at making shots as well, and they should have a little bit of onus could be placed there. Now Bradley Beal has been great all year. He's been one of the best in the league all year for his points per game. And his field goal percentage is actually pretty high at 49%. So I really got nothing bad to say. The only issue would be is whether or not they make the playoffs. And I don't know if they go on a run. It seems possible. I don't see why they wouldn't. Like if when this team was first put together this year, I thought they were going to make the playoffs. But now I don't. It doesn't look as promising. So, and I'm not sure why. I guess yeah, only they could answer that.
Okay, so the reason why I have Westbrook and Beal at number three. So combined together, they're actually averaging 54 points, 15 rebounds, and 15 assists. And
wow.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Westbrook's 22, 10, and 10. Beal is 32, yeah. 5, and 5. So,
really good.
Yeah, together they're great. But Westbrook, for his whole career, I don't think he makes the players around him better. I know he gets a lot of assists, but I don't know if he actually makes the players around him better. I don't know, man. Like, you know, like him and Durant couldn't get it done. He couldn't get it done, like, you know, couldn't get anything done when Durant left. He couldn't get it done in Houston, and now they're not getting it done in Washington. And so I love Beal. I've always been a member of the Beal fan club, if that's a thing. But I've never been a fan of Westbrook, but I can't deny the numbers he puts up, even though I don't appreciate his rebound numbers and I don't really respect the assists because – I've watched Westbrook play for years. He makes a lot of bad passes. He has a lot of turnovers. That's a fact. He does get a lot of assists, but it's only because the ball is always in his hands. So when he was in OKC, Durant would let him take the ball most of the time because Durant got his shots and they won whatever. They won enough. But Westbrook always had the ball. And so he would get enough assists because he always had the ball in his hands. But he was turning it over a lot too. And he was making bad passes that didn't lead to anything. So, but I still have Westbrook and Beal at number three because they are very productive as a backcourt. But Washington will probably not make the playoffs. And yeah.
So would you say with your opinion, would you think that in the new school of basketball, like when I think of San Antonio, Golden State, how they move the ball three or four, maybe five passes before they shoot. Do you think that's a better style of play as opposed to a point guard just driving and passing to the wing?
I think
for an open, maybe even an open shot.
I think it's a way better style, a way better style. And the reason is that you're looking for the best shot. You're moving the ball around. People feel involved. People are more engaged. The problem with, you know, point guard, you know, penetrate and kick or shooting guard or somebody penetrate and kick is that there can be like a number of plays, like two, three, four possessions where a couple guys don't even touch the ball. And I think that that like lack of engagement can start to affect the team chemistry, the way the game is going, like in the current moment. So I do think it's a factor.
So the way the Golden State Warriors played, like when Steph and Clay were at their height, where the ball was moving five, six, we're going to say at least five times a possession, it really motivates everybody on the team to not only get some shots up, but actually probably play defense at the other end as well.
Yeah, I just think it's just really good for like team morale and also like team engagement.
Yeah, well, I like morale. That's pretty important in any locker room or on any team. So number two, who did you have as number two again?
I have Lillard and McCollum.
Oh, okay. So you seem like you're a big fan of them. I am too. I just really want to – I'd love to see them in the finals once. I'd like to see it. Yeah, I've always liked Portland. CJ, if he's healthy, you think they'd do well. Maybe they – do they need another piece? Do they need a LaMarcus Aldridge?
Well, with Lillard and McCollum, so just quickly, they're averaging together 55 points, 8 rebounds, and 13 assists a game.
Okay.
So that's really good, really good in points. They could get a couple more rebounds, but it's not really their job. Having 13 assists between them, that's fine. I think that's okay for a backcourt. But the problem with them, and going back a few years, is that there's always been injury problems with Portland, and I feel so bad for them. Zach Collins always has injuries. Nurkic has had his fair share of injuries. McCollum has had some injuries. And maybe there's a couple other players that I'm forgetting about in the last like 4 or 5 years, but it seems like the Portland Trailblazers are always like, you know, they're always in the playoffs. They've been in the playoffs the last 5 or 6 years, I'm pretty sure. But there's always some injuries with them. And so I really feel bad for them. Lillard and McCollum have never had like a full unit to totally work with and see what they can actually do in the playoffs.
That's a pretty good defense. The only thing I would like to point out is that for some reason, people always think that only a point guard should get assists. But I really feel your best shooting guard should be on the floor. I'm not going to argue that point. But I really feel that a shooting guard should be almost as good as a point guard as your point guard is. I mean, if you look back in history and you look at a Scottie Pippen, even a Klay Thompson, these guys could not only defend, but they could pass really well. And they passed to everybody and they kept everyone involved like a point guard. And if you have a shooting guard that gets almost as many assists, it shows that they're doing just as much as the point guard. So, yeah, I would like to see a point guard, shooting guard get like almost 18 or more assists a game. That would together, that would be pretty hard to stop, I think, from a team standpoint.
Yeah.
Anyway, so moving on, I got Paul and Booker at – or
you didn't talk about –
who do you have at number
– your number two.
Oh, my number two. Well, it's Harden and Kyrie. And I mean, Harden is leading the league in assists right now at 11 a game. And he even shoots 47% from the field. So that's pretty good. But that's, again, concerning. If that drops down to 46 or lower, that's not really that consistent to win in the playoffs. But then he's got Harden and Kyrie. So, I mean, Harden, the way he plays is very dominant. He's the most dominant backcourt player I think besides Jordan maybe that I've ever seen. I mean, Shaq was probably the most dominant up front, but and then you've got Kyrie who's so good in the final minutes and he hits so many challenge shots. I wouldn't mind seeing them pass and get people more open shots as opposed to being contested on a lot of them. That goes for almost everybody I see in the league, but. I mean, that's probably another podcast, though.
So,
because in real team sports, you're supposed to pass the ball till somebody's open. You're not supposed to take contested shots.
Yeah. Before you move on to your number three, I'll talk about my number one, Harden and Irving. So Harden and Irving combined are getting 53 points, 13 rebounds, and 17 assists. So.
Whoa, that's really good.
So, but I mean, the main bulk of it is Harden. So, I mean, Harden gets 25 points a game, 8 rebounds, and 11 assists. Irving, respectfully, gets 28 points, 5 rebounds, and 6 assists. So, together, 17 assists, that's leading all these other backcourts that we have talked about or are going to talk about. 17 assists together. So they're working great together. Harden has the ball more, but Irving has it when Harden's out for sure, and Irving has it sometimes when Harden's in. And so the way that they're kind of sharing the like point guard responsibilities, I think it's great. And then they're both obviously amazing scorers. And they're also part of a team rebounding strategy, and that's working out really well too. And the Nets are just looking great. Mainly because of them, since Durant has been out for like a month and a half or 2 months now. So Harden and Irving are like the reason why this team, a big reason why this team is so successful.
I think like they could win almost just with those two. I really feel like it's hard to mention without mentioning Durant because in the playoffs with Durant there, I don't see how anybody beats them. I really, if he's healthy and he's ready to go, that'd be really hard. That'd be a really tough, a tough team to beat.
Yeah, I think there's, before you talk about Paul and Booker, I think there's two things happening right now. The Nets are making sure that Durant is 110% before he goes back, and the Lakers are doing the same thing with AD, and I think it's very smart by both the teams because these are the two teams that are probably going to be in the finals.
And I had a question. Do you think that Kyrie and Harden are the best? Is Kyrie the best backcourt pairing that has been with Harden so far?
That's really debatable because Harden and Chris Paul were awesome together. Harden and Irving are also awesome together. So we'll have to see how this plays out. It's too early to tell. But, you know, Harden and Paul were really great together. Harden and Westbrook sucked. But Harden and Paul were great together, and they should have, you know, they should have went further than they did. But there was a Chris Paul injury, of course. You know, Irving and Harden so far, they're showing how good they are, and we'll see how this year plays out.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess I'll move on to Paul and Booker. You know, I mean, we spoke about them before. I mean, we know how good they are. I wouldn't mind going in talking a little bit about Ben Simmons and Seth Curry. I thought those two guys were a really good backcourt.
I think they are a good backcourt, but unlike all the people on all of our lists who are like decent shooters, Ben Simmons is not. So I can't put him too high on the list because I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. Like until he develops some kind of shot, it's really hard for me. He's amazing at defense and he's very good at other things. But until he can shoot, it just really hinders what they can do as a team or what him and Seth can do as a backcourt.
Yeah, I'm finally glad seeing Seth getting some notoriety. I've really kept up with his career since he started. He's always been good, and now he's finally really getting more noticed by the whole league. So
I love Seth Curry. I love Ben Simmons too, but it's just just a little bit of limitation there.
I think we're pretty clear on Miami. I would like to mention Mike Conley and Mitchell. Even though Mitchell's field goal percentage is only 43%, Mike Conley's been a solid point guard in the league since he entered. And you know, me being from Vancouver and seeing the Vancouver Grizzlies go down to Memphis and him doing so good for them, I've always kept up with it. And now he's doing great again. And the team seems like they're going to do well. I'm just not sure if they're a playoff. They're going to move really high in the playoffs. I'm not sure if anybody can agree to that. They're almost like Milwaukee where you don't know what's going to happen until it happens.
Yeah. I will talk about Paul and Booker before I get to my fourth pick. So Paul and Booker, Paul is doing his thing with 16 points, 5 rebounds, 9 assists, which is great. Booker is having a great year with 25 points, 4 rebounds and 5 assists. So as a backcourt, as a point guard and a shooting guard, which they definitively are, in my opinion, they're both doing a great job. And together, they're averaging 41 points, 9 rebounds, and 14 assists. So, yeah, they're doing great. Phoenix is having a wonderful year, and in large part, it's due to them and the other young guys that are really chipping in. Paul and Booker definitely belong to be on this list, but I put them at number 5. And do you want me to talk about Lowry and Van Vliet?
Well, I just wanted to say one thing about Booker is that they did let him play point guard a little bit, and his ball handling, he's improved a lot in that aspect. Like you can see the way he dribbles and he's always looking for teammates. You can see like he has that skill. Like he's almost like a point guard as well. Sure. Yeah.
So what I would say about Lowry and Van Vliet, like first of all, the numbers are very good for them. Lowry's getting 18.6 rebounds, 8 assists. Van Vliet is 20 points, 4 rebounds, and 7 assists. So that's really solid. Like they're not like in the 20s like a lot of these other players, but together they get 38 points. That's good. 10 rebounds together and 15 assists together. So like I have them ahead of Conley and Mitchell. I have them ahead of another funny pick, which we'll talk about after, Terry Rozier and LaMelo Ball. And so Lowry and Van Vliet, but they've been doing it for a couple of years now, right? So I think like as a backcourt, they're still doing it and they deserve respect. And the respect is to have them fourth on my list. Just because like, even though Toronto's not doing well and neither is Washington, I really feel like Westbrook and Beal and Lowry and Van Vliet are doing their jobs and they're doing it very well together. And so, I do have respect for Lowry and Van Vliet. I think they are like, you know, the best part of the Raptors this season. Like Powell's doing good too, but Lowry and Van Vliet are kind of just like very solid. And they're a big reason why Toronto has as many wins as they have, I think.
Well, now after hearing your full explanation, now I can see that all they really need is some people backing those two up, maybe a good wing and maybe a really solid 3-point shooting center. And they could really be in the mix again to to come out of the East. I mean, it's really hard with New Jersey now, but yeah, they're
New
solid.
New Jersey or Brooklyn?
Sure.
yeah.
Did I say New Jersey? Well, I guess I'm too old then. they're still the Nets, though, aren't they?
Nets. So, yeah. So,
oh, this is going great.
I would like honorable mention to Conley and Mitchell because they are having a great year.
Okay.
And they're actually averaging, 41, 7, and 11 together, which is good. But Rozier and Ball are having a good year, too. Like, they're only averaging 36, 10, and 9 together. But Ball's a rookie, and Rozier is still kind of new to this whole, one of the main guys on a team. So I think that Scary Terry and LaMelo are having a good year together. I think they deserve to be mentioned. And it's funny you mentioned Hero and Robinson as your number four. I respect it. But what I was going to say about the Miami Heat is that you've got four guards. You've got Dragic, Robinson, Nunn, and Hero. Dragic is averaging 14 points, Robinson 13, Nunn 13, and Hero 15. So all their points are kind of the same. They all get like 3, 4, 5 assists per game, all about the same. And then they're all averaging about 30 minutes a game. So I consider them all to be like the quote unquote backcourt of the Heat, right?
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to just say two people.
It's an interesting dynamic from the Heat.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to say about Scary Terry and LaMelo. I mean, Terry continues to make difficult shots. He's definitely worth giving the ball to if you need a difficult shot to be taken. And LaMelo is just shocking the world. I mean, he's not really supposed to be shooting. He's shooting amazing. He honestly, the best thing is his attitude and how happy he stays all the time. But I'm continually shocked by his rebounds and assists. I mean, he gets over 6 or 7 a game. That's a lot of effort. I know he had a growth spurt, but that's a lot of effort to put that in. So if you're his teammate, you've got to be.
Yeah, we got about 30 seconds left. So I will say that Ball is averaging 16, 6, and 6, and I think he's having a great rookie year.
Okay, I did want to say one thing before we sign off. So one thing that Michael Jordan always said is he wanted everybody in the world to see him play and see how great just play basketball that he was. And I'm wondering, and I have a question for you, anybody listening, is everybody in the league playing like that and at any time now to see for every kid in the world to see them play?
Interesting.
All right. Well, you have a great day, and I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.